the faithful.
Of the faithful.
Balasya,
Balasya
of the void.
Of the void.
Dantasya,
Dantasya
subjugated.
Subjugated.
Anucharasya,
Anucharasya
strictly following the instructions.
Strictly following the instructions.
Cha and. Canto 1, Chapter 5, Verse 29. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. I was very much attached to those sages. I was gentle in behavior, and all my sins were eradicated in their service. In my heart, I had strong faith in them. I had subjugated the senses, and I was strictly following them with body and mind. Purport. These are the necessary qualifications of a prospective candidate. Who can expect to be elevated to the position of a pure, unadulterated devotee? Such a candidate must always seek the association of pure devotees. One should not be misled by pseudo-devotees. He himself must be plain and gentle to receive the instructions of such a pure devotee. A pure devotee is a completely surrendered soul unto the personality of Godhead. He knows the personality of Godhead as the supreme proprietor and all others as his servitors. And by the association of pure devotees only, one can get rid of all sins accumulated by mundane association. A neophyte devotee must faithfully serve the pure devotee, and he should be very much obedient and strictly follow the instructions. These are the signs of a devotee who is determined to achieve success even in the existing duration of life. This is real education, not what they give you in the schools and the universities in the modern world. That is not proper education for an actual civilized life. That is technical education for sense gratification. It does not instill correct, necessary human character. Every educational system that is well designed has purpose. It's a complicated system. It takes years to teach someone in a school, no matter what kind of school. Now, if it's a full-term school, there's years of investment. Teachers have to spend a lot of time and energy and have to think carefully what they're doing. So before you plan any real educational system that's more than a one or two day course, a real educational system, you have to first of all decide what are you aiming at? What do you want this system, this machine to produce? It is senseless to go to all the trouble to plan and then implement an educational system if you haven't clearly defined what you're trying to turn these young people into. So modern educational system, look at any textbook, it doesn't even in India, no matter what the subject is, you know, on the first page there's a plea to national unity. You know, we're all Indians here. You know, we all belong to the same country. That's what they're trying to teach you, how to be a good Indian citizen. You know, stop being a Punjabi or a Bengali and be an Indian. And forget your Hinduism or your Christianity, be secular. This is what they want to teach you. They want to make you into what they want an Indian citizen to be. There's an agenda. There's a purpose of their education. Of course, they want to train up engineers and doctors, and the people who are poor and ignorant, let them remain poor and ignorant. There's an interest to train up a technological elite and just make everybody a good citizen. But there's a purpose. You know, the government spends a lot of money and engages the smartest experts to design these educational systems. They don't happen haphazardly. Even though the purpose is imperfect and materialistic, still, It was carefully done. So if you're going to design a spiritual education system, you should have a clear idea. First of all, what you're aiming at. What do you want to turn a person into? This is the ancient Vedic educational system. The greatest rishis gave their careful attention to what are they trying to do. So it's not just, although it looks like the ancient system involved mainly memorizing the Vedas. Little boys, 5-year-old, would be taught by rote, mantra by mantra, and they would memorize. And this memorization would go on for 20 years or more until their brains were packed with mantras. If someone was good, in 12 years he could learn one entire Veda belonging in the shaka, the branch of his, that his family belongs to. And if he's brilliant, he could go on and learn 2 or 3 or 4 Vedas. Although theoretically, to learn all 4 Vedas should take 48 years. You would be, you know, ready to retire by the time you finish school. And then you could be titled Chaturvedi. There's no justification to claim the title if you don't even know any Veda. Maybe your grandfather or his grandfather knew 4 Vedas, but you don't even know 1 mantra. What are you calling yourself Chaube or Chaturvedi for? This is education. The purpose is not to memorize the Vedas. The purpose is to develop brahminical character. And therefore, the whole emphasis in the Vedic educational system is to teach respect for real authority, especially for spiritual authority. The guru-disciple relationship, learning that is the real core of Vedic education. Everything else is peripheral, secondary. A student has to learn to become the disciple of his teacher and accept the teacher as guru and offer proper respect to the guru and serve him. By serving, no matter how diligent you are and how smart you are and how many facts you packed into your brain, and in the ancient system, how much you memorize, no matter how much, you may know the whole Rig Veda backwards and forwards. You can recite it backwards and inside out, and they do that for practice. Kramapata, where they recite the words out of order intentionally as a memorization exercise. So maybe you can do that. You can recite the Rig Veda backwards and inside out, literally. But if you haven't developed devotion to your teachers, they're not going to give you their blessings. Just like in the modern system, the exam is there. The exam may be standardized, maybe a nationwide exam. And the testing is objective. You get the answers wrong, then you fail. And you cannot pass the course. Objective testing. So there's also objective testing in the Vedic system. Have you earned the blessings of your guru? Is your guru satisfied with you? Then you pass, otherwise you fail. Without the blessings of the teacher, real education bears no fruit. You know, you've gone through all the motions, you've stuffed your brain, but you haven't learned the service attitude. And therefore the guru, because he's evaluating you objectively, is not free to give you a passing grade if your attitude hasn't developed properly. Because that attitude is the real core of education, of spiritual education. So here we read that Narada, after all of his training, 4 months of training, hearing Krishna Katha, and serving the Vaishnavas, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. How's it going? Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Yeah, I know the rest. I just stopped halfway to explain it. By regularly serving the Bhagavatam in the form of the book and the form of the devotee, serving the Shastra although here we're talking specifically about Bhagavatam, but the same applies to the ancient Vedic system. Study the Vedas and serve the devotees. Then, first of all, your disqualifications are eradicated. The pride in your heart, this is the first disqualification. To have real education. Even Chanaka, he's not a Vaishnava, but he recognizes. Vidya dadati vinayam. The first fruit of knowledge, of education, is that you become humble. You give up your false pride. Oh, I'm the son of a king. My father was a great pundit. I've got an IQ of 178. So what? Until you get vinayam, some humility, some realistic, honest appraisal of yourself as something less than perfect. Unless you can see your own faults, you cannot be educated. Any more than a man who is very sick but refuses to admit it cannot get proper treatment. He won't go to the doctor, or he won't listen to the doctor even after he goes to him, because he's not convinced that he's really sick. If you're not convinced that there's something wrong with you, if you think you're perfect, then you can't be fixed. And education cannot be imparted to you, nor can medical treatment be given to such a sick person. So first thing is develop some humility, which really is just based on honestly looking at yourself, realistically. Then you should be humble after looking at yourself honestly. Then you can receive instructions. Tad vijnanartam sagurune vabhigarchit samitpahi. One who knows that he has something to learn. Not that he's presuming he already knows everything. But he knows he doesn't know, and he needs to be improved. Not just his knowledge is deficient, he realizes my character is deficient. I need to be turned into a proper person. Then he goes to Guru. Samitpani, respectfully. The image is holding firewood in the hand. Because going back, this is an image from the ancient system, this is a statement from the Upanishads, coming from the ancient times. When a prospective brahmachari first comes to the ashram, he should indicate that he's ready to become a student and do service and please his guru and get his blessings. He's not here to argue or to just use the teacher for his own selfish purposes. The student should come to the ashram for the first time holding firewood in his hands, meaning that I'm here to do service. The service that the students would do in the ancient forest ashrams was to usually, basically, to help their guru maintain the ashram and help him perform yajna. That's what ancient rishis and brahmanas did. They studied the Vedas and performed sacrifices. So a disciple who comes with firewood means I'm ready to help you perform your yajna. I'm here to assist, not just for selfish purposes. I'm ready to be of service. That is how the guru should be approached. Or as Krishna says, tadvidi pranipatena. Come and offer your obeisances. Narada has done that. Tasya evam anuraptasya. Narada is very... Well, anurapta means attached. He has affection for his guru. Guru is a human being, not a machine. Teacher is a person. When you show that you have love for your teacher, then the teacher will be sympathetic to you. If you're inimical to your teacher, he won't be very inclined to have much to do with you. A teacher doesn't need inimical students, hostile students. There should be no hostility toward the teacher. Otherwise, go find a different teacher. Don't bother this person. If you don't like him, don't bother him. Don't go to a teacher just to harass him. This is offensive. If you're anurakta, if you like the teacher, then go, then approach him. If you don't like him, find somebody else. There are plenty of teachers in the world. Anuraktasya, prashritasya, obedient. Not argumentative, not unnecessarily questioning. You can answer submissive, ask it submissive questions, but not just be pestering and looking for fault. Hata enasa, free from sins. You know, the ashram has rules. Each ashram has its own rules. Some are more strict than others. But there are activities that are not allowed in the ashram. In this ashram, we don't allow drinking tea, suppose. So a disciple who can't stop drinking tea, he's not ready for that ashram. Then go to some other ashram where they allow you to drink tea. Hatainasa, what the sins are, what's not allowed, that depends on the local rules of the ashram. But if you're going to join the ashram, you should follow the rules, whatever they happen to be. Prabhupada made very strict rules for his ashrams. He didn't have to. He could have allowed his Western disciples to keep their habits, to go ahead and continue eating meat, and not try to restrict their sex life. Meat eating, they didn't have too much trouble with. Many of them were interested in becoming vegetarians anyway. That was relatively easy, especially when he filled them with Krishna prasadam, expertly cooked, you know, the devotees, and offered to Krishna. The new devotees were very happy to give up their hamburgers and everything else to get prasadam from Srila Prabhupada. But the illicit sex was not so easy for these young bohemians and hippies, for whom free sex, free love was a religion, that was their religion. So giving that up was difficult. But over the months of the first 2 years that Prabhupada was there, he convinced many of these young people to give it up, even though it was very difficult. He established very strict rules for his ashrams, for his disciples. No illicit sex, no intoxication, including tea and coffee. He could have been more liberal. He could have allowed, just like other gurus, other yogis, they allow their Western disciples to do anything and everything, or at least not maintain such a strict standard. Prabhupada lost disciples who were otherwise sincere but could not maintain those. Nityananda. But still, he insisted on a high standard. And anybody who takes initiation in ISKCON should know that he's expected to follow these four regulative principles, including the grihasthas. Now, no illicit sex, no intoxication. This is the standard for ISKCON. If you join this ashram, these are the rules here. And then Narada's other qualification, Shraddha Dhanasya. He was faithful. He had confidence in the truth of what his teachers were teaching him. They were teaching him the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam and narrations about Krishna. Narada says what they were speaking to me was Krishna Katha. So that's not dry philosophy, you know, just out of the Upanishads. This is Krishna Katha. You don't call what you read in the Upanishads usually Krishna Katha. It's Brahma Katha. Narrations about the Absolute Truth, something about the Absolute Truth. But Krishna Katha means descriptions of the personality of Godhead. It may be some other avatar, Lord Ram, Lord Varaha, Vamana, but that, it must be Bhagavan, Bhagavat Katha. Then you can call it Krishna Katha. Otherwise call it Brahma Katha or Gramya Katha if you're just talking mundane business. Krishna Katha. And you, for Narada to be a suitable student to be listening, he should have faith in such a topic. He should be convinced that Krishna Katha is the most important thing to learn. Otherwise, if he wanted to study engineering instead, he should have gone to IIT instead. If he wanted something else, but because he was seriously interested in and had faith in the super importance of Krishna Katha, therefore he was a suitable student. Shraddha, that was what Shraddhadana means. Convinced about the significance of the topic and the validity of the topic. Why study something you have no faith in? People have to do it sometimes just to get their diploma and get a job. They study things they don't believe in. But that's hypocritical. Honest education, you should study what you believe in. Not just hypothetically. Someone's professor, a professor in Vaishnav studies, and he doesn't believe any of it. He reads the Bhagavatam, he reads the Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengali, and he has no faith in any of it. There are such professors, especially in the West, and also in India. They're studying, they're teaching Vaishnavism, but they're Mayavadis, or materialists. No faith. How can you be authority on the subject? You're not even a proper student, but you have no faith in the matter, what you're reading and what you're teaching. But Narada had great faith. Even though he was a little boy, Balasya, he was self-controlled. Anucharasya, a faithful servant of his teachers. And therefore, they're going to give their blessings. That comes in the next verse. In the form of the essence of transcendental knowledge that they will impart to him just before they leave. And on the basis of that knowledge, he will be able to achieve, even though he won't meet his teachers again, they give him everything he needs to perfect the rest of his life and go back to his spiritual identity as the great sage Narada. He earned the blessings of his teachers, therefore his whole training was completely successful. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
So there are certain rules in the ashrams as such, and many devotees say that Prabhupada has given so many standards, different people are following different standards, we cannot follow everything. So they give an excuse in these directions.
Well, no, Prabhupada insisted on certain unchangeable standards. And then there are other things that Prabhupada didn't insist on as absolutes. And that can be vary from ashram to ashram. We can't have a 16-round ashram and an 8-round ashram in ISKCON. The minimum is 16 rounds a day for anyone who wants to be in the line of Srila Prabhupada. He specified that no one, I'm reducing the standard from 64 to 16 rounds. But he said, no one in the future after me has the right to make it less than 16 minimum for initiation. So that rule can't be changed. If you have an ashram where it's told you can chant 8 rounds, that's not a bona fide ISKCON ashram. And other things, 4 regulative principles. We can't have a 3 regulative principle ashram. But we can have, beside that, there are other things. There are optional rules that an individual ashram can have. You know, they can set standards for themselves as long as the basic principles are not violated and are maintained. Those are our basic principles. Chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna every day and follow strictly the 4 regulative principles. And then, you know, if you're in an ashram, you should come to Mangal Arati, you should come to Bhagavatam class, Guru Puja, that's minimum. And a particular ashram could say, okay, in our ashram you have to come also to evening arati, evening class. That's the prerogative of the ashram authorities, to set an additional standard or make up some additional rules. Those who don't like those rules can opt to go to some other ashram where they don't insist you go to the evening program. But an ashram has a right to decide. This is discretionary. In some situations, devotees may be too busy doing important preaching service to be there at 6 o'clock for the evening arati. And the temple authorities can decide that, what to allow, what not to allow. And then if some ashram rules are silly, like you have to march in line while you're chanting japa, back in, you know, like an army, then, you know, also, there's no, Prabhupada didn't forbid that. If you want to be in such an ashram, where you, you know, you chant your japa marching in formation like soldiers, go ahead. But it's, you know, it's the option of the ashram authority, and it's the option of the devotees to join such an ashram. But the basic principles that Prabhupada established as unchangeable, they have to be maintained and not neglected. Some temple may not have installed deities. They only have a picture, some small ashram, preaching center. Other temple has elaborate deities, and therefore different rules for deity worship. If you have installed deities, then the standard must be stricter and carefully maintained. Different rules according to different situations. Okay. Okay. Anything else?
If a disciple has a disagreement with the guru,
yes,
he may feel afraid to express opposition because of the statement you said that they don't want to waste, you know, guru doesn't want to waste their time on disciples who are not faithful.
Well, you should be faithful. Don't lose your faith, even if, and so what do you do with a doubt? If you let it fester without expressing it, it'll become worse. You want not to be of disservice to your guru and cause him trouble. And you're thinking that my expressing my doubt is going to cause him severe trouble. He'll think that I'm a nonsense and be disturbed by me. But what will happen if you don't express it and it festers and it creates other more serious symptoms in you? Like you can't do your service, and you want to go away, and maybe you do go away. Doesn't that cause a lot more trouble to the guru? If you actually end up falling down because you haven't expressed your doubt? So, better not to have doubts, to have everything clearly understood, and to be in perfect harmony with the guru. But if there is a problem, then express it, because otherwise it'll turn into more serious difficulty. You'll cause more trouble by not expressing it in many cases. Doubts are best brought out into the open. It's like a boil. You should let the pus out. Don't let it fester. So the boil of a doubt in your heart, you should let the pus out. You should express it, even though it's filthy. But let it out, otherwise it will poison your whole life. Yes? Make the point that, but still, when you have to approach your guru with a doubt, or even an objection, you know, you disagree, do it very respectfully. Mm-hmm. Don't violate the principle of respect. Just be honest, but very, very respectful, always.
So in ISKCON, if a disciple expresses a doubt, and after hearing the response, they're still not in agreement.
Yes.
What's the system for how that's resolved?
You can, bureaucracy for that, no complex system. You can consult with other devotees, senior devotees who you trust, and ask them what they think can be done. If you really have to, if it's a serious problem, you can approach the higher authorities, the GBC, if it's a really serious problem, or you think there's some deviation or something really serious, then you can go up to through the official channels. But otherwise, you can just discuss with devotees whose opinion you respect and ask them how to handle it. Ultimate recourse is to submit the problem to the GBC. Okay. Nothing complicated. No, system is basic. First, try to handle it just by discussing. And if you had to bring someone else into it, find someone who's respectable and is not a troublemaker. And if you have to, go through the official channels to bring it out into the open if there's a serious problem. But not to make politics, not to make propaganda and talk, backstabbing and talking to everybody behind their back, that should not be done. And try not to disturb others' faith. Even if your faith is disturbed, you don't have to bring everybody else down. Hare Krishna. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Yeah, you know, my friend. Ah, you know it.